Danse, Anine, Bujou. Hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. As Indigenous people, community is at the heart of who we are. For Indigenous entrepreneurs, that means not just making profits, but supporting and empowering others along the way. Whether it's res grannies selling their crafts at the powwow, or families making Indian tacos in their kitchens for the community, entrepreneurship today is an evolution of Indigenous life that has always existed.
All the vendors that you see that are always on the powwow trail, those are all entrepreneurs, and we're just sort of awakening to the idea of taking it the next step further.
We want to be recognized, and we want the opportunity to show our wares and have that equal opportunity to say, listen, we can do this, and chances are we might even be able to do it better.
The point of living in a community, I think, is to make sure that everyone is good, right? I mean, if you're not doing that, why are you here?
Today, these Indigenous entrepreneurs are cultivating culturally rooted businesses. Creating your own business takes guts, determination, and tenacity. Long hours are spent getting your dream off the ground. You will overcome unseen obstacles and setbacks. But despite the challenges, entrepreneurship is on the rise in Indigenous communities. Sunshine Tenasco sees starting your own business as a tool for empowerment and self-sufficiency. But it goes beyond the individual. She also believes in collaboration over competition, and is creating a community of Indigenous entrepreneurs across Turtle Island. Sunshine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
How would you describe the Indigenous entrepreneurial scene right now?
Yeah, it's really, it's bumping right now. There's so much energy and vibes, and there's a lot of hope in this space for us.
I love that. Sunshine, why do you think there are so many Indigenous businesses popping up?
I think there always has been Indigenous businesses. You know, people used to have these like little pop-up shops in their house where they'd sell like chocolate bars or nachos or jalapeno poppers or bannock or whatever. It's just that now it's more visible because of social media. All the vendors that you see that are always on the powwow trail, those are all entrepreneurs. And we're just sort of awakening to the idea of taking it the next step further. We are learning about branding. We are taking up space. So I think that's what's really causing a ruckus in this space in a positive way. But it's always been there.
Part of your thing to help entrepreneurs and people who might want to start a business is you started the Powwow Pitch in 2016. Tell me about what that is.
Yeah, it's a pitch competition for Indigenous entrepreneurs. I started my first business at the powwow like everybody does. I sold baby moccasins, and what really changed my life was taking it on Dragon's Den. And that really shifted everything for me. And I was like, why don't we have more of this in Indigenous community? Somewhere where Indigenous people feel safe. Somewhere where they know the processes. Somewhere, at a powwow. That's where everybody goes and tests their products. And they just don't call it that. They just don't say, like, I am testing the products. They just go ahead and try it out. And if it catches, they keep going. So that's sort of where the roots of Powwow Pitch. And it started for funsies, I always say. I was just like, I want to do this. And now here we are, 8+ years later, and it's for realsies.
And how does Powwow Pitch work?
We show up at a powwow. We get between 25 to 40 Indigenous entrepreneurs who want to pitch. They have 60 seconds to pitch in front of a panel of judges. And then it's narrowed down to the top 10. They get mentored for a few hours. And then at the end of the day, we get to give away cash prizes. And then whoever wins based on those powwows then goes on to the online version, which is across Turtle Island. And last year we attracted 2,400 Indigenous entrepreneurs. Wow. And then all these opportunities, we hope, like, Yes, it's awesome if we could get everybody to win, but we hope that even the process itself and the connections that you make and all of those other things, we hope that everybody wins in joining.
Mm. And how? What does cultivating a culture of entrepreneurship look like for you?
It's really been organic. It's really been just like, try it out, make the mistakes, and listen to what our entrepreneurs are telling us, and then pivoting after that. That's really what our method has been, and I hope continues to still be, because we're, you know, we were a startup too, so we're learning just alongside everyone else.
Clearly, you've done a lot to support and develop and help these people along, hold them up in terms of starting their businesses and continuing them. Why have you dedicated so much of your work to helping other Indigenous entrepreneurs?
For a lot of reasons. I think that's so layered, the answer to that. I always have this like this thing that I tell to Canadians, because Indigenous people get it, but non-Indigenous people are kind of like shocked by it. But you know, if a white person goes on Dragon's Den, like the whole white community isn't going to be cheering for that person, like at all. It's just going to be like, all right, let's see what business they have. And if it's good, you know, you may get a fan, you may not. But when an Indigenous person does something that is like, you know, sort of out of this world, like all the communities across Indian country cheer and post and share. And like, there's this whole, you know, explosion. And so I think that was really, really a part of it that I witnessed firsthand. And this was like, not when internet was so big as it is now, right? It really had an impact on the whole community. And I was like, wow, okay, I'm just one little human trying to like make this thing work. Imagine if we were able to go to like a few different communities and plant those seeds, and then the impact of that and the impact of that. And like, everybody helps their communities. That's how it works. So that was sort of the idea behind it. And, you know, I mentioned I started it in person at a local powwow, at the Solstice Powwow in Ottawa. And I thought it was just a one-off and I was just going to do it because I thought it was going to be fun. And as soon as I was done that day, like I knew like, oh, frig, I have to do this again because of the impact that I felt it was making.
Can you give me an example of when you've seen, you know, a business go from pitch to making differences in Indigenous community?
Oh my God, we see it every friggin' day. Like I often use the same, you know, I use the bigger businesses, but I just because they're very much involved with powwow pitch. But Michaeli Lazor from Sequoia, she went from pitching because she just wanted to rebrand her packaging. And now she has this workshop space. She employs so many people from the community. And like, it's just the way that she does it. The way that she runs her business is so like the Indigenous way. And it's been so slow, her progress, that she'll say like, you know, it's taken over 20 years, but like watching that is like, you created something from nothing. That's friggin' magic. That's alchemy.
I like that. That's alchemy. You touched on this a little earlier. You had said that, you know, Indigenous people will get it when, you know, we invest in our community and we support our community. Why do you think that is? What makes Indigenous run businesses different from the mainstream?
It's just the way we are all raised, the idea of potluck or potlatch or however you want to call it. The, you know, you go to a powwow, there's the giveaway at the end, there's the thank you, there's the, it's just like the way we naturally do things. And when you have like, I don't know what the best word is, but like not a moral compass, but like ways of being and living, it's naturally gonna leak over into the way that you do business. I really think that like Indigenous people, once we're all at the next level, collectively, like we are going to show, we're setting a precedent on how good business models look like and function.
Mm. Let's turn the focus a little to advice as somebody who's been doing this for a long time. What are some of the most important things that Indigenous people need to do or keep in mind when starting their own business?
Yeah, just show up, be consistent. It doesn't have to be, if you show up one day and it's your 20% and that's all you have in you, hey man, you just gave it 100%. If that's all you had and you gave it, good for you. Show up again the next day. My path hasn't been the traditional, like I just sort of went, and who knows where it's going to take me, really. I just keep following it.
Be open to the dream.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
I'll put that on a t-shirt.
Next business.
Speaking of, what is your dream vision for, you know, the world of Indigenous entrepreneurship in the next, you know, years, 10, 15 years?
I'd love for there to be visibly public businesses. You know, like we go to the grocery store, there's a Chinese section for food, there's a Mexican section for food, and there's no Indigenous section. You know, why are we not more visible? You know, just to be a part of that in a tiny way would be like, my dreams are, I'm good.
That's a wonderful dream. How do you think, you know, supporting and seeing all of these Indigenous businesses and whether they're big or small, how does that help Canada or Turtle Island? What is the benefit on the other side of the fence?
Less ignorance, I would hope, on so many fronts, education, equity. Also, like, even traditionally, I always go back to this too, but like, you know, we were always told like there's gonna come a day where non-Indigenous people are going to have to make a choice. There's gonna be a path. And which path are you going to choose? Capitalism, things that are detrimental to Mother Earth, or are you going to choose slower, more sustainable ways, good ways of doing things? And we were always told that Indigenous people were the people who are going to show the way. And I'm kind of surprised that business has been the way, because I don't see, you know what I mean? Like what a crazy way for my contribution to be. Like I would never have anticipated it to be in that area. But here we are.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Sunshine, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. I really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Sunshine Tenasco is an entrepreneur and author from Kitigan-Zibi Anishinaabeg First Nation. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, business savvy Indigenous. Coming up.
It's intrinsic to us as business owners. Without community involvement, there is no success and there is no joy in what you end up doing.
A panel of Indigenous entrepreneurs on the importance of community. But first, can coffee make a difference in Indigenous people's lives? Mark Marcelet Nawagabo thinks it can. He's the owner of Birch Bark Coffee, an organic fair trade coffee that he started in 2018. It's not your average cup of joe, and Mark is not your average business owner. Birch Bark Coffee is grown and produced by Indigenous farmers, and one of Mark's main missions for his business is to support communities in getting clean drinking water. He says this second oldest trade item can change the world for the better, no matter how you like your Java.
I've used pour overs, espresso machines, just regular bun machines, and really, they all have their own place in the coffee world and give unique tastes. I mean, I'm a good old fashioned pour over, and I'm always a big fan of grinding the beans. It just, the aroma in your home just lights it up. My name is Mark Marcelet Nawagabo. I'm First Nations, Ojibwe to be exact. I'm a citizen and band member of Whitefish River First Nations, located in the district of Manitoulin Island. And I am the founder of a company called Birch Bark Coffee Company. And it is a social enterprise, innovative social enterprise that's cause-driven with a pay-it-forward attitude. And it's really about coffee making a difference. I was always concerned about the infrastructure issues we've had in our communities, and I always wanted to try and give back in some way. And probably about 5 years ago, I happened to be invited to the Assembly of First Nations Water Symposium, and it really, while I knew of the issues in our communities, being in a meeting or in a big meeting such as that really opened my eyes more to the problematic issues we had in our communities, not just about water, about everything, the infrastructures. And I went back home later in the week and I started thinking about how I could make a difference. And, you know, I picked a commodity that's, you know, the second most sold product in the world, coffee. And, you know, part of it being a social piece where people talk and converse over coffee and tea, I thought, what a better way of bringing education, awareness, and a message out to people through selling coffee. When I learn, and I'm still learning about different historical pieces of our communities, and, you know, when you look back when entrepreneurs started, really, it was, you know, First Nations people or Indigenous people that did a lot of trading and entrepreneurship way back when, especially the Mohawks. But I didn't realize until last year that Indigenous people, First Nations people, when they were trading, they were trading coffee. And really, when they, you know, a lot of our traditional pieces or language really comes on what we observe and see. And they called it black medicine. And I really thought that was very interesting to learn. And so I dove deeper into that and really wanted to get, you know, to tell people that the historical pieces of coffee travel even with the First Nations communities. And it's not just other parts of the continent or other countries. It happened here in Canada. And very fortunate. And there's many layers as to why I created this business. And really, we're storytellers. We're visionary people. And I incorporated all that into this business model that I had so I could share the story of our people passionately and, you know, offering a lot of gratitude as to having the opportunity to be able to share the stories of some of the concerns that I have in our communities. Putting into perspective, I haven't cold called as a salesperson to anybody. People have come to me. It started off very slow in the sense of, you know, consumers and then mom and pop cafes. And then as we gained more momentum in the business, and in every interview I do, I always give thanks and praise to Shopify. So the owners, Tobias, you know, Harley and Toby, for giving me the opportunity on e-commerce on Shopify. And that's where this all started. And but that being said, yeah, some of the bigger companies, we've collaborated with Chapman's Ice Cream. Wonderful family that give back full-heartedly to all kinds of different programs and businesses and cultures and stuff. And I was very fortunate to be asked to be part of the new premium line, so the cold brew ice cream. And then there's Costco. I've been told that I am the first First Nations coffee to go into Costco in Canada. We have coffee with MLSE Entertainment. So down at some of the restaurants in Toronto, we're with most of the food services. So Compass Canada, Compass Group, we're with Sodexo, Aramark, Brown's Food Services. So the extension of that is what they own, the coffee goes there. So a lot of the universities, colleges, and the other big one we just got into was Northwest Grocers. So that's Northwest Territories and all the northern parts of Ontario, that big company. I had an email sent to me with a picture from Baker Lake. And that was really cool because the husband and wife sent it and they had so much snow that on their back patio door, the snow was halfway up their door, and they put a birch bark coffee bag on the outside on the snowbank and took a picture of it and say, "Welcome to Baker Lake." So that was pretty neat. And the coffee's gone all over the world. It's gone to, I've reached people in Thailand, England, New Zealand, It's been everywhere, and it's just been a really neat journey and meeting a lot of cool people. You know, I always refer back to as an entrepreneur, your mind goes 100 miles an hour, and you know, it's not that you're creating something new, it's just how can you do it better. And what I've noticed is that there's been a massive shift in, you know, the millennials and Generation Zs on, and I call it almost like my word for it is shift thinking, where they're starting to look at the value behind what they purchase. And they're looking at, I bought this product. Where does it come from? What's sustainable? What's ethical? And I think that I can get into these corporations and basically influence their consumers to start thinking a better way and start thinking about, again, sustainability, ethical purchases, and really, you know, challenging, again, the way they think in their own personal life, but also in their business life, and just going forward on purchases and helping people. And I think that that really ties into paying it forward as well. There's a lot of tradition that impacts our businesses, and there's a lot of tradition that we follow, or guiding virtues, if that's what you want to say, that, you know, that we use within our businesses to connect us, for some of us anyway, for me, I guess I'll speak for me, is with the Creator. Whomever the Creator is for anybody, I have this piece where I smudge in the morning and the smoke goes up into the sky and it goes to the Creator, and that's my time to share my messages and questions, you know, with our Creator. And I think that our businesses are so important to learn from, you know, whether it's a coffee company, or if it's clothing, or it's, you know, sustainable cosmetics. Each one of our companies you can learn from. Each one of them has a purpose. Each one of them has a message. And we are trying to change the world for the better, but we're also trying to leave good footprints behind us for the ones that follow.
Mark Marsley, now a Gabo, is the founder of Birch Bark Coffee Company. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Up next, we've gathered a panel of three Indigenous entrepreneurs who dared to do things differently. They all started their own businesses to fill a void that the mainstream was missing, because they wanted to create businesses that were better aligned with their values and the values of their communities. Jen Harper is the founder of Cheekbone Beauty Cosmetics. She started it out of her basement in 2016, and now you can find her products in Sephora stores. Jen is Anishinaabe and a member of the Northwest Angle No. 33 First Nation in Kenora. Welcome, Jen.
Hi.
Patrice Musso started her business in her kitchen. She is the owner and creator of Satya Organics, which provides organic skincare products. The products are carried in over 1,000 Shoppers Drug Mart stores across the country. Patrice is a member of Fort William First Nation. Welcome.
Thanks, Rosanna.
And Jeff Ward is the founder and CEO of Animiki, an Indigenous-led technology company that supports Indigenous businesses through website and software development. It's making its mark in a variety of sectors, from investment firms to the film industry to museums like the Canadian Museum for Human Rights in Winnipeg. Jeff is Anishinaabe and Métis. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, let's start with question number one. One of the other guests on our show this week had said that entrepreneurship isn't necessarily about creating something brand new. It's about doing things better. How would you describe how your business does things better? Let's start with Jen.
Well, I hope we do things better. I feel like we do. And I think it's about when we look at how we source our raw ingredients, to how we make and create our products, and to how we work with our own team at Cheekbone Beauty. And so creating a company that literally exists, you know, to do good at the same time of doing business. I'm personally super proud of the enormous efforts we've undertaken to provide, which I love to call receipts for the hard work we've done, especially in our industry in the beauty space. Greenwashing is enormously rampant. So one path we chose was to become B Corp certified company because we wanted a third party really vetting our supply chain and how we source products and how we bring them into the world.
And Patrice?
It's, you know, funny, Jen bringing up B Corp, because we're about to get B Corp certified as well. And I'm assuming we're talking about the way Indigenous people do business versus like the mainstream. Everyone talks about how difficult it is to become B Corp certified. Well, I'll tell you, we sailed through because we were already doing a lot of the stuff that these guys are now tracking, right? Things like paying living wages, giving back to the community, being aware of where our materials are coming from and where they're going, tracking all that kind of information. And I think that that's what Indigenous people inherently do right from the get-go, is when we start our businesses, what we think about is not just ourselves in the business, but the community at large and how we're there to actually serve them. So I think that's the major differentiator right there.
Mm. And Jeff?
At Animiki, we like to think about how to incorporate Indigenous values into how we operate as a business. And so we've adopted the seven sacred teachings, or the seven grandfather teachings at Animiki. And so we literally think about and talk about regularly love. How do we incorporate love in the workplace and in technology and through the technology that we build? And on the note of B Corp, so I agree with Patrice. I believe a lot of Indigenous entrepreneurs are operating what the B Corp movement would call a social enterprise. We were the first Indigenous B Corp in Canada and the second in North America. And we got in on our first try with like flying colors kind of thing. So I think, you know, when we think about business and operating things with social impact, I'd like to think of it like the wings of a bird. You kind of need both. You need the financial resiliency and approaches to business, but you also need the impact and giving back to community in order for that bird to kind of make some good distance and, you know, share that message with the world.
Mm, that's beautiful. I love that.
Oh, I love that. Can I steal that, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Sharing. We're sharing.
Exactly. I'm going to share your teaching.
Absolutely.
Just offer some virtual tobacco and it should be fine.
Exactly.
Now, Jen, you have been on the show before. We talked about how you had the beautiful dream about the little girl with the lipstick and how you wanted to give back to community. How important is giving back in your business model?
It really is, I think, at the core of our brand. It's something that we've always done regardless of profits. And super proud that this year we'll be giving out 10 scholarships to Indigenous youth. We started off with giving back to several different causes, but I, you know, in our early days, my advisors suggested we just find organizations we could support, because this idea of building the scholarship fund did happen from that dream. However, I set that aside for a couple of years because to take on a task like that was a little bit more daunting than just starting the business side of things. And so the first year of the scholarship fund, which was 2021, we gave out one scholarship. Last year we gave out five, and this year we're giving out 10. So when I think about our products, and of course, so proud of those and the feedback we get and how we've certainly transformed, because since how we spoke in, that was in, I think, 2017, Rosanna, that was like the early days. We are literally not even the same business or brand that we were back then. We've made so many leaps and strides in terms of how we operate and the kind of work that we do. And of course, yeah, giving back is at the root of everything we do, and certainly the thing that makes me the most proud. Even in you know, on those tumultuous, hard times of operating a business in this economy, I'm like, well, you know what? I came out and I did what I said I was going to do, and our brand has always done what we said we're going to do, and that was give back to community, and I'm certainly most proud of that.
Why was it important for you to do that? Why give back to the community? Why not just focus on building your brand?
So truth be told, I'm in an industry where the margins are excessively wonderful. I just heard a number, which is insane. So we know like J&J, obviously they're in beauty, also in pharma. But I literally read at the beginning of this week, that their profits from last year were like $65 million. And when you understand our space and with the incredible margins that we offer, why wouldn't we create a business where we could use some of those to do good things and not just based on this concept of, you know, J&J, huge corporate responsibility organization. They've sponsored me to be at sustainable brands and event, and they're, of course they do that. But I thought when we started Cheekbone Beauty, why can't I have that from the beginning and not make it an afterthought? And I really feel in my heart that it was something that weighed on me, that this is like an Anishinaabe way to be. It's always about how can we give back and how can we support our communities. And I remember my brother BJ, when I was telling him about that, he's like, oh, this is how our people would do it. If we had the roadmap to start businesses and companies, he's like, this is certainly how our people would do it.
Mm-hmm. I got some nods there and some yes affirmations. Jeff, you mentioned earlier that you align your business with the seven teachings, which is not something that one would normally associate with a tech company. You launched your career out of Silicon Valley in the 90s. What was challenging for you about the way tech worked then?
Yeah, I spent a bunch of time in Silicon Valley early in my career. It was a really wild place to be as a essentially teenager in Silicon Valley in big mainstream tech. And it was a very capitalistic, materialistic place. And I was there for the whole dot-com boom and subsequent bust. And after moving back to Canada, I just wanted to support the communities that I was raised within through technology. And so I immediately started getting our communities online, websites and software and that kind of thing. And I've been doing that for 20 years. And now I think, fast forward all these many years later, we're seeing the business community start to think about business just a little bit differently. Like the whole B Corp movement is like, I don't know, 10, 15 years old. And Indigenous peoples, we've been operating with, you might call, social enterprises for forever and ever. We're the first international exporters from these lands through the fur trade and things like that. And now we do it with technology and in cosmetics and all kinds of industries. And so you're seeing this kind of, I think, awakening from the mainstream business and tech communities that there might be other ways to do business, and an up and coming demographic of folks and customers that are being a little bit more conscious. It's great that mainstream business and technology are sort of catching up with Indigenous entrepreneurs.
Why was it important for you to come from that place, the place of the seven teaching, in particular love?
Because it's how I was raised. I remember talking to my dad, so excited and so proud to say, you know, hey, we're a B Corp, we do this and that. And he's like, well, you had no choice. It's how you were raised. You were raised within these values. And so, of course, you're going to want to give back to your people and your community, because it's what we do.
Patrice, how would you describe the role community plays in the way Indigenous entrepreneurs do business?
When I think about community, it's intrinsic to us as business owners. Without community involvement, there is no success and there is no joy in what you end up doing. So I think that that's just an understanding. It's hard to articulate. And I know Jen and I, we've been talking about how do we articulate that for people in a way that makes sense. But it's not an easy thing to describe. One of the things that I definitely talk about with people, though, is the fact that you do have to have that kind of community support and involvement and the reciprocity in order to keep going on and be successful in business.
Can you give me an example of how you've seen your business in particular impact community?
Jen's been such an inspiration. I don't know if I've never actually told her about this, because we do a lot of the same stuff that she has always done, you know, like giving in kind, donating our time, things like that, and not having a direct a thing like a scholarship that we give to specifically. And so she's been really inspirational. So I've been really thinking about what our thing is going to be. You know, we've given to Res Dogs and Clan Mothers and all these different amazing organizations. But what is it that really speaks to me? So I'm still having the time to think about that. But I also, you know, think it's not just about giving to charities or things like that. It's really about how you interact with community, you know, who you hire, the kind of wages that you pay, how you respect the people that are inside your business, as well as the people that are your customers, and how available you make yourself to people who have questions, like if they want to start their own businesses. Like, that is something that's really exciting to me, is the fact that I can be a resource for other Indigenous-led businesses if they have questions.
Mm. What about for you, Jen? You know, I've watched your TikTok videos, and I feel like community really kind of comes around for you a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, giving in kind and cash and those things are really important. What I've learned along the way, which really touched me and was really powerful, is, you know, I've been sort of preaching this representation matters thing from the beginning. And I think I didn't really understand what that really freaking would mean. So we did this campaign with Sephora called hashtag glossed over. And at the time we were only in 15 locations across the country. And I went into the Eaton Center. This Sephora had paid for this giant billboard in the center of the mall. And it was our branded picture. And it said Cheekbone Beauty, now available at Sephora. So I'm sitting at the bottom of the Eaton Center sobbing because I didn't know they were going to do that. Then I get to go into the store and have an event that night. And of course, Sephora customers coming in and I'm spending time with them and sharing our blush and tips and tricks on how to apply it. And then this little Anishinaabe girl comes in and she's like 12 or 13 and she's with her mom and her auntie. But I knew, like, I saw them. And, you know, when we see each other, we know, right? We're like looking. And of course, they had come in to visit and meet us. And I was super grateful. And this little girl already had spunk that I couldn't imagine having at 12. And the reason I was sobbing at the bottom of the Eaton Center that morning is because when I was little, I loved going to visit my dad who lived in Toronto at the time. He didn't move back to our res until I was 14. So I'd visit him from St. Catharines and I would always want to go to the Eaton Center. But, you know, my memories of going there with him were, when I thought about it, one, being accused of stealing with him at one point, two, like someone, he was arguing with someone about a status card, you know, like, so these aren't great memories that a 12-year-old kid would be having with their dad. And never in those early years of my life did I ever imagine in a million years owning a brand that is available in a store like Sephora, like the largest beauty retailer in the whole entire world. So when I'm driving home after that event with that family that night, I'm literally in my car and I thought, oh my goodness, this is it. This is why this matters so much. Because just the fact that I've done this, accomplished this, it's actually giving kids this idea that I don't even think we fully understand as humans, how on this unconscious level, when we see ourselves, what that really will mean for future generations. And so the fact that we've been able to push this brand so hard, so fast, so forward, and put it in places that Indigenous brands have never been before, is giving our community the ability to see themselves. And it's that whole concept of when we can see it, we can be it. And so my role now as a founder, CEO, is so much bigger than just starting a business. It's literally giving people the opportunity to see themselves doing whatever the heck they want in any sort of industry they want. And we know, like, grateful that there's so many of us as entrepreneurs now in all these different industries and all these different spaces where our kids can feel seen.
That's beautiful.
I think we forget that too. Like, we're so busy with our heads down in our businesses about what kind of impacts we are having. Like, Satya is the very first Indigenous brand in Shoppers Drug Mart ever. Like, the very first, which is crazy. But at the same time, it's hopefully the first of many.
And Jeff, what about for you? What, how have you seen your business impact the community in a positive way?
Well, for us, within our impact focus and thesis, it includes a focus on getting Indigenous people into the tech. We want to see people, Indigenous peoples, leading in tech for so many reasons. At the community level, for economic development and to empower communities. And really, as we see tech as a path towards economic justice. And so this means we need more Indigenous people in tech and leading in tech, the way that Indigenous peoples have always been technologists. We've always been technologists. We've always been scientists and inventors. And now we do it with zeros and ones, and we build tech. And so part of that representation is as well being there to show young Indigenous folks that we've got people everywhere in every industry, every aspect of business. This includes technology. And so, you know, a big part of our giving back program over the years has been working with youth, teaching them how to code robots, or speaking at youth conferences. And one of the stories that is dear to my heart is hearing many years later that one of the students that was in our robotics coding camp that we did decided to go into computer science at the university here. And so if it reaches one youth to kind of choose a career, then it was worth it.
Mm. I understand that your grandmother is a source of inspiration for you. How did her entrepreneurial spirit impact your life?
So my late grandmother, she was a disabled Indigenous woman, and it's hard for her to find work elsewhere. She was turned away from schools to be able to go to school. And so turning towards entrepreneurship was how she supported our family. And so I feel that a lot of that sort of entrepreneurial spirit within me comes through my parents, through my grandmother, and the kind of business that she had. It was working with other Indigenous women doing beadwork and making moccasins and kind of creating this network to lift herself and her community up as well. So that aspect of giving back and bringing others along, deeply rooted through her.
Mm. Another common value among Indigenous entrepreneurs is this desire to see each other succeed, to hold each other up, to help people along that path. I'm going to get emotional because just thinking about all the ways that you three do that is beautiful. If there is one piece of advice that you could give somebody who's listening, an Indigenous youth maybe, or another mother or a father, what help, you know, that would help empower them, what would it be? Let's start with Jen.
I always give this advice about, you know, just like, I'm not special. Like, honestly, I didn't do well in school. I was a horrible student, struggled most of my life with addiction. And yet, because I finally found something that I felt empowered by, I've been able to create the life that I never dreamed about living, but has been the dream sort of thing. And the only reason that this worked is, one, I will give all the glory to Creator of the Universe. That for me, having that connection, spending as much time as possible in nature, because that's where I feel the most close and connected. And second is just being consistent. Like every day, it was no big dramatic thing. I just woke up, knew I had to stay sober, and then work on Cheekbone Beauty. Like, and it's, of course, and then be a mom and wife and those other things at the same time. But like, I just did that every single day. And those days just added up. And they added up to the day that Sephora called and said, you're going to be in our stores. They added up to the day JCPenney set call and 13 Loom called and said, you were going to put you in, you know, 609 locations. Those consistent days just will add up.
And Patrice?
Yeah, it, you know, there is nothing saying that you cannot be own your own business and be successful at it. Absolutely. You know, I thought that I would never open a business. It was never something that was inspirational to me, that I had any drive to at all, because my perception of business was actually pretty negative. Then I decided that I was going to make a business dependent on my values. And Jen and I almost have an identical story. I literally dropped out of high school. I did go back and finish, did not go to university. You know, I don't have any of this like business background, whatever. I'm terrible at math, like all of these things that you think that you have to have a business. No, you just find people who love the things that you don't, and you bring them together and build a team. You can do this. There is absolutely nothing that says that you can't. And if you have somebody who says you shouldn't, just stop hanging out with them. Honestly, find your people, people like Jeff and Jen and myself, and reach out to us and have, you know, and let's build community together, because there is no reason whatsoever why you can't be doing anything that you want to.
And last but certainly not least, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree on the values piece for Indigenous entrepreneurs, and thinking about competitors as well. Like, what I see within the Indigenous entrepreneurship community is opportunities to lift each other up, to maybe not see each other as competitors, but potential collaborators. I see that it's huge in the Indigenous business community. A lot of my closest friends today that, you know, I'm connected with their families, going back, you know, a decade or more, thinking when I first met these folks, we could have seen each other as competitors, but it's more, how do we collaborate? How do we lift each other up? How do we build that community? So whenever there's, you know, new folks that come in to say Indigenous technologists, like, we welcome them. We want to partner. We want to connect, because we want more people in Indigenous tech. So why would we compete in that kind of thing? So how can we lift each other up and just think more longer term and building community and thinking seven generations, the impacts of our work.
Jeff, Patrice, Jen, thank you so much for this conversation. It's so inspirational. I might just have to start a business. I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe selling poetry on the corner, but I'm doing it.
You heard it here first.
All good. Reach out. Rosanna will talk. But actually, if anybody else wants to chat, LinkedIn, best place to reach.
Yeah.
Absolutely, LinkedIn. Same.
Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rosanna.
Jen Harper is Anishinaabe and a member of the Northwest Angle No. 33 First Nation in Kenora, Ontario. Patrice Musso is a member of Fort William First Nation, and Jeff Ward is Anishinaabe and Métis. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Next, we head to a Peterborough, Ontario print shop where James Hodgson creates his original t-shirts. From Orange Shirt Day to the Seven Grandfather Teachings and custom shirts for local charities, Nish Tees is paying it forward with style. James gave Unreserved producer Rhiannon Johnson a tour of the shop and showed her how he makes his retro tees and what inspires his 80s throwback designs.
My name is James Hodgson, and I am Loon Clan from White Sand First Nation, and I am the owner of Nish Tees in Peterborough. I have been in business for 8 years now. I think we started in 2016, so yeah, wow. You know, in the 80s, t-shirts were rad. They you know, totally, like, it was Garbage Pail Kids and, like, Mad Magazine, like, everybody was taking stuff and messing with it, and it was hilarious. I've been screen printing since I went to Trent University and picked up screen printing with a friend as a part-time job. It was just so reliable. There was a lot of print shops around back in the 90s and the early 2000s, so lots of places to work and not a lot of people that had screen printing experience. So, you know, it was a kind of a niche market, and I was a shoe-in. Coming out and breaking out and starting out my own thing, started really small and worked out of my apartment and partnered with places that I had worked at in the past. So I could go into their place on weekends and, you know, use their space. I was doing overflow printing. So when they got busy, they'd call me in and I'd, you know, go in at the crack of dawn and, you know, get them up to speed. But this type of business is really as scalable as you want it to be, right? It can be a side hustle. You can do it out of your basement or whatever, spare room, den or whatever. This is just a screen that I'm going to put onto the press. We do a lot of local stuff, so we do a lot of high schools, a lot of Trent University stuff. Then there's across the country, right? So we've got stuff in people in BC and Alberta, with our orange shirt sales and the interest in Orange Shirt Day, with each passing year, we're getting more corporate requests for orders, which opens the door for other stuff, right? So we've done large clients like Ontario Power Generation. It was a recent one. We've done stuff with Danny Wenjack Fund, Inspire. There is that interest at a corporate level, that kind of reconciliation, which is basically, it's an exchange of fund, a trickle down of funds, right? So we get it, and then what do we do with it? We give it away. What we do with all our Orange Shirt Day stuff, whether it's corporate sales or sales from our website, is we do a fundraiser every year with that stuff. Like last year, we did, I think, four or five different fundraisers for different, you know, with different products on our website. It's not about just making the money. It's about making sure that the people that need it get something out of it as well. So, you know, with our Orange Shirt stuff, we do try to keep it to like an Indigenous cause. I'm staying in a river. Money is the water. I'm just grabbing some out, giving it to whoever needs it, you know? I don't need a ton of money to live. I've been there. I've been homeless. And if you can go somewhere and get warm for half an hour and get a meal or some food, that's great. That's a game changer, right? It's not something I really want to go back to in my life, but I understand and respect the people that are going through that for whatever reason. I was a teenager, so basically I was couch surfing a lot, not really working out with my family. I was adopted. I was adopted into a non-Indigenous family in an affluent suburb of Toronto. So, you know, there's a little bit of a compounded kind of thing going on there. Just rebelling really hard and not getting along with my family, leaving the house, couch surfing. Sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. Sometimes I'd sleep in a playground, sometimes I'd just stay up all night at Tim Hortons. It was open 24 hours. You know, so I know those options, those bleak options, right? And, you know, I've got a roof over my head. We've got whatever food we want to eat, that kind of stuff. So I've got three great little kitties. So, you know, yeah, that's, what more do I need from that? I want to just kind of get people into a better position to, you know, get a good solid meal when you're homeless. Like, it can be a game changer. For sure, right? Make you make a good decision instead of a poor decision. The point of living in a community, I think, is to make sure that everyone is good, right? I mean, if you're not doing that, why are you here? So that's, again, with the giving part, is that's just, should just be it. You know, like mob movies where you're always giving your cut to the boss. You know, my boss is the people that need help. That's just a little bit of taxation that I do to myself to keep myself sane.
James Hodgson is a Anishinaabe and the owner of Nish Teas in Peterborough, Ontario. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Rhiannon Johnson, Kim Kasher, Laura Bone-Steubing, and Zoe Tennant. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Kanaskinamit Nawa. Ego say.